Fletcher, why don't you tell us how Arms for Elephants got its start?
Well, that's kind of a long story. I'll make it quick, though. My cousin Matt and I, we both do vocals and guitar for the band. We've been playing in bands together since we were 15, 16 years old, so about 10 years now. And our drummer, I've been playing at church with since we were about 13. So we have a pretty developed chemistry between the three of us. And this band is kind of what all of that has led to, where we finally kind of know how to go about making the music sound how we want it to, and playing more shows, you know, making an actual album, taking it to another level that we never reached in high school.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said you were one of the guitarists as well, correct?
Yep.
So, I mean, I'm a guitarist too, so I gotta ask, this is like my secret perverted question, what kind of gear are you guys using?
For recording, it's almost all digital. And for live, we've been using, we were using Marshall amps, Marshall half stacks, and then just various effects. And we actually were robbed on tour a few months ago and decided to go all digital as far as guitars goes. And so now we both use 11 racks live. And we got the idea from another local band, Cold Kingdom, and they're just killing it. They're amazing. And so we played a show with them, and their guitars sounded better than anyone else's in this particular venue. We're like, okay, well, maybe we'll give it a shot. You know, it's not the same as a tube amp, but it does save space, and it's if you use it properly, it sounds pretty good. So we decided to go for it.
Now, when you mean all digital, do you mean like you're using live, you're using rack mounts direct into the board?
Yep.
Oh, wow, because, see, I'm old school, man. I've got the head in the cabinet, which my back really regrets now, but, well, you know how that is, man. I mean, that shit's heavy as hell, man.
you know? I think ideally, you know, everyone wants a tube amp. I think you can't really fully copy that sound. But as far as what you can do with digital equipment these days, it's pretty incredible. Not ideal tone wise, but as far as space saving at this point, it's necessary for us.
Oh yeah. I think the last 10 years, digital's really stepped up because, well, like in my case, a few years ago, I got a Line 6, you know, the latest pod. And, you know, I was like, all right, I'll just try it out, or I'll use it for practice and stuff. And I recorded with it through Pro Tools, and I was like, damn. You know, I mean, it's pretty good.
Yeah, it's impressive.
You know, so do you advocate like using digital fully now? I mean, as far as time, you know, like as a time saver and for setup, or do you still notice a difference between that and using like the old Marshall, the JCMs or whatever?
I'd say it's definitely got to be an individual preference. I think with certain genres, you can get away with what they're able to do digitally nowadays, but I would recommend trying both for any guitarist, because I mean, especially if you're playing like blues, for instance, I don't think I would use anything other than an actual tube amp, but if it works for you, then go for it.
Yeah, and I think digital's getting to the point now where if you take the time to tweak it enough, you can get a killer sound, like for a recording.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
So having said that, what equipment were you using for My Judas Scene?
We used for guitar tones. We mostly just used Pod Farm from Line 6. And so that came with a UX2 interface, and it's got a lot of great guitar amps and pedals in it, and then some really great vocal effects as well. And, you know, bass, there's some bass stuff in there that's pretty good. So, but that's what we did in this case, and it worked out.
Oh yeah, because I mean, I think both your guys' guitar tones are monstrous. I mean, with you being a two guitar band, did you go hard left and the other guy go hard right, or how did you pan it?
We made the rhythm guitar two tracks pretty hard right and pretty hard left. And then the lead guitar, most of the time, is about 50 or 60 right.
Okay. Yeah, because, I mean, a lot of people don't think that's important, but it gives such a dynamic to the sound, to the finished song.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and this whole thing was a learning process for us as far as mixing and panning and all that, and even just EQ and DSing and all that stuff was a learning process.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I came from one guitar band, and I used to do that stuff all the time, and then after it was all mixed, I'd be like, how the fuck are we going to play this live now? Let me ask you about the songwriting, because you guys are in a unique spot, because I would consider you more of a hard rock band than maybe a new metal band or anything like that. And the reason I say that is because you have these monster hooks, and new metal doesn't really travel into that territory that much. They're more about, getting the oomph factor and making it as pressing as possible, where you guys are a good mix of, being hardcore, and for lack of a better term, almost poppy when it comes to songwriting, yep. So
yeah, we basically, the hook and all the melodies in general, very, very important to us. It's just, in most of the music that we love, that's a big component. And then keeping that heavy edge to it too. There's nothing too crazy and there's nothing too complex, because that's not what we're trying to do. But there is that type of energy in there, and balancing that out with a catchy hook, that's just a great combo, and that's what we strive to do.
Well, and another thing too is your the lyrics are, the lyrics seem well thought out, and every song touches on a subject. So how does the lyric come about when you're writing the songs? And because to me, the album seems almost like a diary.
Mm-hmm.
Was that something that was that a conscious decision or?
Sort of. We, even just as we went with these songs, from one to the next, our style and the way we approached it changed somewhat. We basically just, we wanted to hit on issues that are universal, that anyone can relate to. And then to be as vulnerable and honest as we can. And I think we started doing it more and more at the end, and we want to take that even further next time around and make it more personal yet. But, even so, it was, stepping out of our comfort zone and talking about things that we've dealt with that aren't really comfortable talking about, but, other people can relate to them. So let's go for it, Mm-hmm.
Well, in a way, don't you find that therapeutic too?
Absolutely. Yep.
Because it's good that you say that you changed during the songwriting process, because I could hear somewhat of a change throughout the album, but I would say it was more of an evolution. Mm-hmm. Like you guys wrote and recorded that at just the right time of your existence. You literally documented an evolution in the band. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Now, did you guys feel that as it was happening, or in hindsight when you heard it later?
Yeah, and to a degree, it's intentional, because every new song that we write, that's it, that's good, that's what that song should be. It turned into what it's supposed to be. Now the next time and it's got to be different. It's got to be better. We try to one up ourselves every time, and part of that means going at it in a completely different way. And trying things that we wouldn't normally try.
Yeah. Can you give our listeners an example of one thing that where you were totally out of your comfort zone during the process of making this?
Well, one thing would be lyrically, talking about addiction in particular. It's not something we've directly saying about before. So that made me a little uncomfortable. And then just putting those softer songs on the album, because there's three of them that are total change-up songs. And so that was a little bit can we do this? Yeah, just do it. It's a different sound, but it fits within the realm of the sound. So we part with it, even though it was a little uncomfortable.
But you know what the great thing is, though? You did it in a way that it fits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's why, you know, just even deciding that the order of the songs, it's a little bit tricky. You're like, wow, we have to actually make this cohesive.
Now, do you think, like, when you do your next album, because it seems like you're going more and more that way. Do you think with the next album and the songs that haven't been written yet, or if they are, I don't know, but like that you're going to go more towards, you know, like social awareness?
I think so, yeah. And then instrumentally, and as far as the sound as well, I think maybe hit on a little bit heavier, but not more heavy, if that makes any sense. Like, when we are heavy, I want it to be even heavier, but I still want a lot of areas where it's you know, dreamy and emotional and yeah. Even poppy.
Yeah, you're talking about intensity.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, have you played any of these songs live yet? I mean, I know the album comes out today, but have you like given them any test drives out in the, you know, out to the public?
We've played about half of that album on our second to last tour, and we played almost the whole thing on a tour we just did. And actually, this Saturday we'll be doing "The Laws That Guide My Feet" for the first time live. So that'll make every song except for track one we will have done live by Saturday.
Nice. Now, why haven't you played track one yet, man? Because that's a killer opener. The business of barely getting by.
Yeah, it's a great song, and that's actually probably my favorite song on the album. We just haven't really tackled it yet, as far as getting it ready for that stage. And I really want it to be, you know, I want it to hold up and sound how it should. Relative to the track.
Yeah. Now that's one of a few songs actually that when I first heard, I kind of thought to myself, I wonder if this song sounded way different when it was in its inception stage, like when it was, you know, an embryo, I guess you could say. You know, it sounds like it evolved into something different than what it was intended.
Yeah, probably the hardest song to complete for that reason, because it started out as something completely different and kind of fleshed itself out into what it is now. But even down to like the order of how it would be structured was really confusing at first, because we had all these ideas and it's like, well, does this work as a bridge? Does this work as part of the verse? I don't know. So we just kind of had to put it together and hope that it worked, and eventually you know, started to make sense, and now it has a structure that doesn't really make sense in the pop realm, but sort of. So it's kind of its own little beast.
Yeah. Now, having played all the other songs live, which song personally to you is the most fun to play live?
Oh man.
I mean, I know that's not kind of fair because track one hasn't been played live yet, but I mean, out of what's been played live so far, what's your personal favorite?
I think probably my favorite to play live right now is Charlatan. And maybe it's just because it's more new. We've only played it live for one tour. But I love how it feels and how it sounds live. And it's fairly easy compared to how I thought it would be. So
yeah,
it's kind of moving.
I actually think the laws, like for me, my personal favorite, I think the laws that guide my feet would be like just totally phenomenal live.
Yeah, and that's actually, if I could say that, I would say that, because we've been practicing it this weekend, and it already, like, it feels so good. And if it works out how it's working out in practice, it's going to be a new favorite for sure.
Nice. Now, what have you got coming up now that the album's out now?
What was that?
Oh, what do you have coming up now that the album is out and sent out to the world?
We've got a CD release show in our hometown, Mankato, this Saturday, and then another one in Minneapolis a week from that date. And then we're going to mostly just concentrate on recording again, and then next year We hope to play more festivals and, you know, some touring, but hopefully get on as many festivals as we can.
Mm. Now, if you could get on any festival you want, like no matter how big or small, what would it be and why?
Boy, I don't know. I suppose I got to say Warped Tour, because it's been such a staple in our lives, you know, since first started listening to music. I think that'd be really cool to at least try out.
Yeah. See, I would have either guessed Warped or Download, or maybe Rock Am Ring.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can picture you guys at Download and Rock Am Ring too.
Yeah, I mean, we're in a position where we're going to take whatever we can get, obviously. So, I'd be stoked to do any of those for sure.
Mm-hmm. Now, being a newer band, like I said, I've been in bands a while. I'm 42, so I started out in the early 90s, and to us, social media was, you know, getting out the staple gun and going down to Kinko's and getting about 200 flyers made up, you know. Yep. So with you being one of the new dogs, man, I mean, how do you feel social media has helped music for your generation as opposed to mine?
I think it's an amazing outlet. And we have a pretty incredible opportunity with it that like your generation didn't have. But at the same time, a lot of times it feels just like a cafeteria where everyone's talking and no one's listening. so it's kind of hard to know how to utilize it fully, but what it can do is pretty spectacular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were a lot of people like that in my day, man. All talk and no listen. So, you know, I think we have a similarity there. But I get what you're saying, because there's a lot of white noise now. You know, and everybody that, I think another thing too that's creating that white noise is you could go to Guitar Center and get a complete studio set up for $300 now. You know,
yeah,
whereas, yeah, whereas to me, like, we had to get the whole Fostech set up for like $5,000 or $6,000 with the board and the reel to reel and all that stuff and the mics and stuff. And, you know, where it was actually cheaper for us to go rent a studio, you know, than it was to do what you guys did and record in the bedroom. And your stuff actually has a better, you know, sound quality than my stuff from 20 years ago. You know, so, mm-hmm. You know, so I think that and the social media contributes to the white noise. But would you, let me know if you agree with this. I mean, I think also that it gives better opportunity for the cream to float to the top, like the best to show up, or, you know, the best to, you know, because then you've got all this wasteland, and then, you know, you've got bands like Arms and Elephants that can rise above it because they're unique.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. The opportunity is there. If you're willing to put the work in and you have a good product, you got a good platform to show it off. So yeah, that I definitely agree.
So, well, let me ask you this too. One of the victims, I guess you could say, of the social media age and of the file sharing age too, would be the major labels, you know, but I mean, you know, they're kind of evil. I mean, I don't know, in my opinion, I don't know what your opinion is about it, but would you take a major label you know, record deal if you were offered one today, like the standard contract?
I don't know. It would definitely be a toss-up, and it would be something to think on and to get advice on from, I mean, I know a few people in the industry, and I would definitely get their input on it. But I mean, cause on one hand, I want to be able to, you know, do this as a career and not have to have a normal job. On the other hand, I don't want to sell my soul basically.
I think it comes down to a case by case basis. Cause I've interviewed major label artists and I've asked them that question, and some are still on major labels and some aren't. You know, and some mm-hmm. aren't, and some aren't by choice. And I've had some people say, yeah, the nanosecond my label, you know, my contract was up, I was partying and, you know, started my own, you know, like went on my own and all that stuff. And I've had some people, like, you know, that are on major labels say, well, they're good because they take care of the business side of it, that, and get all the you know, the little tiny stuff out of the way so you don't have to think about it. You know, so I guess
I mean,
go ahead.
Even just the exposure of it would be, you know, it would be great. But yeah, it's definitely something that I would need to have some professional opinion on.
So do you think it comes down to like, okay, who you're dealing with in the majors? Because, you know, like I said, I've heard everything in between. Like, you know, yeah, they're kind of a pain in the ass, but they take care of a lot of stuff that you don't have to deal with, and you know, and all mm-hmm. that other stuff. And you know, and then I've had some people say, no, they absolutely fucked me for 10 years in a row.
And that's the kind of thing that, you know, I hear enough times where it's like, well, I'm going to definitely be wary if it comes to a situation where I have to choose, you know.
Yeah. Now, think about this. I mean, if you were offered that deal, one of the things that actually gets brought up is, would you want to continue to own your own music, or would you want them to have it from there on out?
I would definitely prefer to have ownership. But you know, at the same time, it depends on the specifics of the deal and what it would be used for.
I mean, there's been examples, and I've heard about this, I mean, from the people it's happened to, where, you know, well, I woke up one morning, got my bowl of Cheerios and turned the TV on, and my song's in a frickin' McDonald's commercial.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? So, you know, totally misconstrued the title of the song, too.
it's just kind of humiliating and degrading at a certain point.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because the one that gets blamed, you know, for selling out is the artist, not the label.
Yeah, yep.
You know, famous example of that is Nirvana, Smells Like Teen Spirit. 5 years later, mm-hmm. 5 years later, you know, Courtney Love sells the rights to that song, and now, you know, and they named a deodorant Teen Spirit, and they used that song in the commercial. You probably remember that. You know, mm-hmm. totally fucked up my image for Nirvana for like a year.
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing that no band wants that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So how do you think, I mean, like, so how do you as an indie band, I mean, this might be a complex question, but how do you as an indie band try to keep your integrity and stay in the music business today?
Well, we basically look at it like we do this for the reasons we do it, and obviously we want to be able to make money at it. But if that were the reason we were in it, we would have quit a long time ago, because we're not making hardly any money. So as long as we're doing it for the right reasons and staying true artists in the way that we're making music for the music, not for, you know, going for a certain thing or trying to get big in this vein of music. I think if you start doing that, you're immediately compromising, and it's just basically suicide to your creativity. So I look at it, as long as we don't let that happen, as long as we're making music for the right reasons and staying true as artists to ourselves, then, you know, what can go wrong?
Exactly. And I think what you just said is actually one of the reasons that Arms for Relevance is, like I said earlier, is part of that cream that floats to the top in that white noise. You know,
mm-hmm. I hope so.
Well, no, I mean, I think so. And I think it shows in the quality of your work, too, because, like I said, I did not hear one song that I call filler. You know, I just didn't hear that. It, you know, like, you know, one of the telltale signs of that is, like, you know, when you, back in the days when you buy a CD, you know, you would immediately hear like three crap songs in a row. It's like, okay, they're doing that for the label.
Yep. Or just you got to have this done now. So, well, whatever, you know, we'll change the chord pattern from this song and call it a different song.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But with my Judas scene, I mean, I don't see that. And, you know, like, I totally congratulate you on this project, man. I mean, it's funny because before the interview started, like I said, you told me it was recorded in a bedroom. I mean, even more bravo for that. Cause I mean, it sounds totally professional.
Yeah, I mean, well, we were going for as professional as possible, and I think it's only going to get better from here. But yeah, I'm impressed with the quality that came out of it, considering we don't hardly know what we're doing. So,
but don't you think the best bands come out of people that just go for it and don't know the business and learn it along the way?
Absolutely, yeah. It's the people that are willing to just put themselves out there and go, just go.
Because what you said reminds me of what Eddie Van Halen said when he first started out, when he was trying all these tricks and stuff, building his own guitar or amp cabinet and stuff. It was because he didn't know what sound he wanted yet. He built it along the way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I mean, to hear you say that, I mean, that makes me even bigger fan of Arms for Elephants. I mean, because you guys are building it along the way. You're building your own foundation is what you're actually doing.
Yeah, and a lot of it's guesswork, and you know, that doesn't discourage us. We're willing to fall, and we're willing to learn.
Oh, so. Yeah, failure is nothing but lessons. You know, it's how you handle it that counts. But yeah, I mean, this album proves it. This is a solid foundation, man. I can't wait to see what you guys come up with next.
Well, thank you, man. I really appreciate that.
So you guys are going to record later this year. You're going to come out with a tour and everything. Where can we find you online so we can follow all that stuff?
Well, our official website is in the works right now, but you can find us on Facebook. Facebook.com/Arms for Elephants and also Arms for Elephants.bandcamp.com, and we're now on iTunes and Spotify too. So